Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 231.
This week on the podcast, America relives the horrors of election 2016 in football form.
Trump's SCOTUS pick doesn't care about your uterus.
And the Muslim ban is a great example of why you have a lawyer look at a contract before you sign it.
A filibuster genre Senate talkathon is underway because not enough senators had performed their school grizzly bear attack material.
And Trump has no idea what the fuck he's doing or signing. And his staff has no idea where the light switches are.
The White House congratulates rising star Frederick Douglass on finally getting his 15 minutes of fame.
And let's hashtag never forget to hashtag never remember the Bowling Green Massacre.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
And hey, when you're on the web,
You're
already there. Why not rate us on iTunes? Maybe leave a comment.
Right.
If you like this podcast, if you
it's
hate
so
this podcast, either one's fine.
Likes, I know, right?
And comments and ratings.
I mean, we have often said on this podcast that we will accept
hate comments are
hate
fine.
Comments.
That's fine as long as you
We're
comment.
We're not proud.
We're not proud. As long as you comment, as long as you help us get up in the iTunes ratings.
That's right.
Say whatever you want.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck. In any case, moving on. We are a day late this week, and that is because of the idiotic American ritual that is the Super Bowl, in which American brands compete to outdo each other in commercial terms,
right.
And other people, I guess, watch football.
Right. I was going to say, or as I like to call it, teaching Lila the rules of football.
Once
every
again.
Year.
Football, like again. Easter, is a thing I can't quite wrap my head around. And so every year I learn the rules. I feel confident in the rules for about 12 hours. And then I immediately let them fall out of my head.
Football and Easter are both complicated.
So true. Yeah. And improbable when you think about it. The rules of football are highly improbable.
I know. You were so shocked and appalled at some of the things that were happening in that football game that are things that happen in all football games.
Literally every rule of football makes no sense to me and sounds highly suspicious.
Yeah. But as we were watching it, we were having the same feeling that apparently the rest of Earth was.
Yeah, we thought we were being really clever, but it turned out everyone was making the same joke in all of America.
It felt like reliving election night all over again.
It was a roller coaster, even if you don't care about football at all and had arbitrarily chosen a team to support for no reason other than that Tom Brady had said that he was a Donald Trump fan.
Right. Well, and that's
which is what
this
most
game,
of us had done.
We entered this game with sort of politics involved already,
right.
Because Trump had talked about his love for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, who is the coach, and Kraft, who's the owner of the team. Brady has talked about, you know, being friends with Donald Trump. There was also, you know, all of the commercials that we knew that were sort of like either banned or like people were starting to, you know, protest or
politically themed Budweiser commercials.
Budweiser commercials that were ultimately
very tame.
Nothing.
You guys,
yeah.
If you were boycotting Budweiser over their commercial,
right.
Get a life.
And there was discussions about how political Lady Gaga's halftime performance was going to get. So we entered this game with politics on the brain. Also,
sure.
We always have politics on the brain because America's just, you know,
falling into
right
a giant
now.
Hellhole.
Right.
Is the technical term for what you're talking
but
about.
But it just felt, because the Patriots were Trump's team, it just felt very much like election night in the sense that they were way behind. ESPN kept tweeting, like, they do this thing where it's like, they very much like 538 does, where they give a, like, you know, the Atlanta Falcons have a 99.999% chance of winning right now because they were so far ahead in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And it felt very much like the percentages that they were giving to
Hillary Clinton
as what she was going to win the election. And then they came from behind and it was surprising. And there were crazy plays that no one thought was going to happen. There was that insane catch that
there
people
was
were.
Overtime.
I mean, there was overtime.
The first time ever in Super Bowl history.
Right.
See, I know
so
a fact.
It was, right,
it's
exactly.
A football fact, you guys.
So it was felt.
It was suspenseful
nationwide.
In the same way. And also, once again, allowed Trump to have a victory that he should have
that
never
nobody
had.
Nobody wanted him to fucking have.
And that he should have God, never had.
And should have never had, yeah.
There were funny tweets.
Yes.
Like, the electors can still stop this and Atlanta will still win the popular vote.
Right, yeah.
But the symbolism of a team from a largely African-American urban center and
right.
a team from one of the most bigoted cities in America, like, having this kind of, you know, showdown was not lost on anyone.
Right. And that's not to say that there probably were not a ton of people on the Atlanta Falcons that voted for Donald Trump.
So true. Or also probably plenty of people on the Patriots who were like, fuck you, Tom Brady. Get out of my fucking
Martellus
face.
Well, Martellus Bennett, who is like their tight end, who had a couple big catches in that game yesterday, has already said that he's not going to the White House.
Yeah.
Because the team that wins the Super Bowl always gets to go to the White House.
Yeah.
I'm sure he probably will end up not being alone.
I would think not.
He will be joined by people on that team who will not be going
like,
to visit the
Because
it's
like, fuck White you,
House. Tom Brady. I know.
I'm sure they hate him too.
Oh,
I mean, there's no way you play football with Tom Brady and you think this guy is a great guy. Like, there's just no way.
Right.
I refuse.
Yeah.
And I'm mostly angry that it is my hatred for him has turned into a hatred for Gisele Bündchen, who's someone who I didn't want to have an opinion on before.
I know, right? I was going to say, you didn't love her before.
No,
doesn't make you upset that you now have to hate
her. It's not like
it's
I was a
more
huge
that you
fan.
You now have to have brain space that
is
an opinion.
Exactly. Like, I had to watch her Instagram live herself at, you know, on TV.
Yeah, and you wanted
and
to punch
like,
her in the
you.
Fucking throat.
You know who was at the game? Mike Pence.
Oh, I know.
He's taken advantage of his... Half of the Trump administration is just there to go to parties, I'm convinced. Like, Ivanka and Jared Kushner are just walking around D.C. going to parties left, right, and center.
Totally.
They haven't been doing much in the way of advising anyone.
No.
Which
and
is
the Trump boys are just using taxpayer money to go on trips.
Exactly.
I don't know if you saw that. They were
sure
like
did.
In Uruguay this weekend or some random
just
place.
Just taxpayering around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're doing exactly what's expected.
Yeah.
But I was... Like, there's something so, like, bizarre about... the relationship between Republican politics and football that makes the Super Bowl like extra uncomfortable if it's a year like this where the politics have really turned against you.
Right. Right.
Because football is sort of like the kind of like the Republican land. Like it's like a sport that's very much allied with the ethos
totally.
Of Republican America in the way that I would argue that like baseball is the equivalent of sort of Democratic America because it's mostly like a big city sport. It's like a New York City sport and like an LA sport and, you know, and basketball to some degree as well.
Sure.
Maybe more in basketball.
Maybe
than
more basketball.
But
yeah.
Basketball, I feel like, is more like a universal sport. Everyone loves
True.
Basketball.
Yeah.
But I feel like football is so like aligned with like this sort of country music Republican,
totally.
You know, anti-choice world.
Yeah.
That I feel like the Super Bowl is just like a big...
Only edged out by NASCAR. Really,
exactly. Yeah. But I feel like the Super Bowl is like the ultimate example of sort of like the worst impulses in American
yeah.
culture just like coming together in one giant, very sparkly moment.
Yeah.
But a moment that was then taken over by Lady Gaga performing Born This Way.
Yes,
and
thank God.
in a more subtle but still real political moment, singing "This,
this land,
land Is Your Land."
Yeah, totally.
When I was younger, I had a brief moment where I knew all of the verses to "This Land Is Your
yeah.
Land," which is how you know,
well,
I guess, that you're from a really progressive household and not
a
religious household.
You probably know a lot of Woody Guthrie lyrics yeah. that a lot of general America,
a lot of America is not. Yeah, there was yeah. probably also a moment where I might have been able to recite most of Alice's Restaurant, which is his son Arlo Guthrie's similar his Watergate
sure.
commentary. Or it's Vietnam and Watergate commentary.
Sure.
So, I mean, I feel like I have that on the brain anyway, but in any
yeah.
case, that was the political highlight of Lady Gaga's performance, which at the
yeah.
moment didn't feel all that revolutionary, but it's only because if you live in West Hollywood, Born This Way isn't that controversial a song.
Right, exactly. Yes, I know. Yeah. If Donald Trump's team won the Super Bowl, Donald Trump himself didn't have a great Super
Lost
Bowl
it
because
big time.
They, the Super Bowl was on Fox, and Fox News, Bill O'Reilly specifically, had, you know, landed this big interview with Trump, and they were going to play it. It led into the Super
right.
Bowl, not on Fox, but on Fox News. So it was like a huge thing. They were like promoting it. It's like pre-Super Bowl, President Trump, blah, 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 whatever. Well, Trump has got himself into some hot water for actually doing a bit of truth-telling, actually.
He's not sure anymore how he feels about Putin, but he's expressed a lot of the emotions about him. That
he
includes
has.
Both admiration and disrespect.
Right, exactly. But O'Reilly sort of pressed him on his love of Putin, and he said, you know, I respect him, I want to get along with him, that's not to say that I will, but I think it's better if we do. He gave
his usual
Putin
answer.
But then O'Reilly pressed him and was like, Putin is a killer.
Right.
Like,
he is
he's
like
a
killed
person
journalists.
He kills journalists. He kills his political enemies, or has tried to anyway.
Right.
He's failed a couple times because these people
are
still alive after he attempted to poison them, which also, like, you're poisoning
them. Yeah, what
them?
Is this, 1920? Like, get over yourself.
I know. Like, come on.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Trump didn't have the right response to this for anyone. for anyone. Certainly not Republicans, because no. They were more mad about this than anybody else was.
I feel like in some ways this is also such a perfect response.
Totally.
It's all the things.
Yeah, exactly. Because
the response is, there are a lot of killers. We have a lot of killers. What, you think our country is so innocent?
And that, the latter part of that statement is where it went wrong for him.
We're hoping to hear.
No. Mm-mm. No.
What if I just continue to call them the GOP football elite? The football elite and the baseball elite?
Seems to contradict those two words.
I know, that's why I love it so much. Yeah. But so in any case, obviously, now he's not wrong. We're not so innocent.
No.
Who do we think we are? Now, but also,
and we have certainly made our own errors. His own administration just recently made one that we're going to talk to recently.
Yeah.
Just about, you know, killing innocent people.
Correct.
But, you know, where we would differ, and I think this was rightly pointed out to him by many members of his own party, is that we don't kill political enemies or journalists.
We try not to.
We will certainly overthrow foreign governments. We will certainly try and assassinate someone but they're never our own people.
We're not assassinating CNN journalists.
We're getting close, right? And I'm not saying those things that we are doing are right.
Right. They're not the right things.
There's a delineation there between those two things. So to compare the two is not a difference between
killing in the national interest, which Brent and I would both be against,
right.
But maybe members of the GOP feel less so, right. And killing people in your own political interest,
right.
Your
exactly.
personal
Who
political interest.
Just happen to dissent
right.
from you, which is because what Putin is doing.
We're supposed to be a country that can handle a little dissent.
That's right.
That's what a democracy is.
Right.
So in any case, this even McConnell almost...
Yeah, this
said
was the first thing, even nearing a rebuke from Mitch McConnell, really about anything since he took office. And it wasn't really a rebuke, but he basically said that he sort of distanced himself a little bit from it without actually saying that it was wrong of him to say. But Marco Rubio sent a couple really scathing tweets.
Rubio is not having Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand why, but I'm also surprised because I did think of him as someone with no backbone.
Yeah. No, I know. Totally.
So
I think Rubio is very much presenting himself
as the anti-Trump
because what's going to happen... You know,
imminently.
Hopefully, dear God, if Trump doesn't get impeached, is that we can re-win this race in 2020 because it'll be such an abject failure. And then they're going to need somebody after that.
Who's like a legitimate person.
Who's a legitimate person. And I think whoever can be the most legitimate person during this administration as like to prove themselves as like the thinking man in this party, I think they'll have an early start on being the person that people will... flock to.
Plus, four years to work out his dry mouth issue seems like enough.
Totally.
I don't know if it will be because he had 4 years before and he didn't do it, but I feel like this is the time to commit Marco Rubio. Yeah. If you want to run for office after this is your moment to work out the dry mouth thing.
Ben Sasse also really dragged him. Of course,
he's been doing a little of that too.
Yeah. I don't think John McCain was very happy about it either. I mean, it was your usual suspects.
Yeah. There's a little bit of an old guard emerging in the Republican Party that's kind of interesting to watch because some people who I suspected would be in the old guard, it turns out, have no principles. I used to think that the GOP had, like, too many principles. Like, their principles were too strong that they couldn't, like, face reality a lot of the time. Like, they were obsessed with things they were convinced was happening on principle that weren't happening. They're obsessed with what women are doing with their bodies based on principles that have nothing to do with real life.
Right.
Like, these are things that I feel like... They are principled stances to some degree. They're just stupid.
Right.
And they're not based in reality or facts.
Yeah.
And they're not considering the right principles. Like,
right.
But they're at least principled. And I feel like now I'm sort of like, it's interesting to watch who in the Republican Party, i.e. Mitch McConnell, has no principles at all.
Right, exactly.
And who is really like trying to sort of eke out some principled stance in the midst of chaos, i.e.
Right.
like a John McCain or even a Marco Rubio at this moment.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but being principled, though it sounds good, is not always like Ted Cruz is very principled. That doesn't make him a good person.
No.
So I'm not even using that as an insult or a compliment. I'm just using this to point out the one quality I thought of Republicans as possessing. It turns out many of them don't possess.
Yeah.
And that some surprising people who I thought had no principles, i.e. Marco Rubio, are turning out to have them.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
It's interesting.
An interesting thing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, last week, I think we mentioned the Supreme Court pick because it had just happened when we recorded. Or am I wrong?
I don't think so. Maybe we didn't. I think it was like guys.
We found out who the Supreme Court pick is.
Right. We found out who the Supreme Court pick is. And in regards to what Lila said about whether we talked about it on the podcast, we have found in the last 2 weeks that it's often hard to keep track.
In a shitstorm of news and facts and alternative facts that are flying by at a rate that we cannot keep track of.
Right, exactly.
We are a two-man operation here. So, we do not have a research staff, and things are getting nuts. Right.
If we talked about Neil Gorsuch last week, then
we're talking about him again.
But
no, I don't think we did.
I don't think we did.
I think it was because I was social media-ing about him.
Yes, exactly. So
that's our Supreme Court pick.
That's it.
That's Trump's. Yeah. Not ours. It's Trump's Supreme Court.
Certainly not ours.
He's a federal judge on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. He's, fun fact, the son of what the New York Times has called the most corrupt head of the EPA ever.
Oh, perfect.
They said Mrs. Gorsuch is the first cabinet-level officer to be cited for contempt by the House in this very scathing article that they wrote in 1983 about her. So that's fun. He holds a law degree from Harvard and a PhD in legal philosophy from Oxford. Mm. There's been some sort of holdouts on the left that are kind of like, he's at least a real human being who's like a qualified judge in the sense that he's a judge.
Yeah.
So like, let him through. But the opposition that the left is sort of taking at this moment is not that he's not qualified. He's obviously qualified.
Right.
It's that this is not a Republican judge's spot.
Right. And that is what I think they're ultimately going to have. I think they're in a little bit of a sticky situation because they know that they sort of have to fight this or die politically.
Right.
But they also, I think, have to figure out how to do it. Because we're about to tell you now, we're about to go through a whole list of things that we would disagree with him on in terms of, women's rights, in terms of gun rights, in terms of assisted suicide. But
up Scalia's mantle. It's just that's not how these spots work. Because Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies, are they going to appoint someone as progressive as her to the court? No. Well, like, that's not what happens.
And the thing that I think we have to remember is that while we disagree with him on all of these things, we're going to disagree with the way that the Supreme Court has worked always, literally since the beginning of time, or at least until, we started nominating people in the way that we do and having Senate hearings and everything, is that the president picks someone, and if they are, like you said, qualified, if they are a person who has written decisions that sound like an adult wrote, if they are a person who sort
holds
of like
a law degree, who has been a judge before,
then short of being Robert Bork, you get confirmed.
Right.
And that is sort of how it always works.
Right.
And it has always
you
also
have to remember is this sort of polite kind of like, supposed to be this sort of House of Lords of America.
Exactly.
It used to be very, very sort of like whispered disagreements, very kind of like we were the reasonable, deliberative body that would agree and in general to uphold norms and things like that.
And we have always, it's also you've always, at least in terms of the Supreme Court, you have always had to meet a fixed 60 vote threshold.
Right.
You know, Republicans obviously probably didn't agree with many of the decisions that Elena Kagan wrote.
Right.
But she got 60-some-odd votes.
But was she a qualified judge
who
they didn't have anything other than ideological differences with?
Right.
Yes.
Yes, she was. So that's how things work. So the Democrats obviously disagree with Neil Gorsuch on a lot of these things. So if they're going to attempt to block his nomination, they got to decide how they want to do it. Obviously, they could go the stolen seat route. I think they can also embarrass him in front of the administration on certain accounts.
Right.
I think you ask him a lot of questions about presidential power and authority. And I think you ask him about how he feels about the firing of Sally Yates, which we're going to get to in a little bit. Because should the Justice Department, be free from influenced by the president? Should we have three separate branches of government? I think it will be interesting. Like, you can, I think, go at him in that respect to sort of
Yeah.
Just make I'll tell him, you make what him my seem opinion like is here. An embarrassment.
Because I know
like,
that's what you were asking for.
It is, yes.
My opinion is that you absolutely go the stolen seat route.
I think so too.
That other route legitimizes that he is someone to truly consider in the real right. sense. And because he is a real human being who has made judicial decisions and is currently a federal judge and is not like a ridiculous person like Betsy yeah. DeVos, or like a Pete Sessions even, yeah. I don't think that if you just try to embarrass him, you have the grounds to reject his nomination.
Yes, whereas, and the Republicans won't care about
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Right, but yeah. they are the ones who broke precedent. The Republicans are the ones who broke the precedent, who made this an uncivil discussion. Yes. And so I think what you say.
Well, and ask him about that, too. Like, exactly. ask him whether Merrick Garland right. should have gotten a hearing.
Exactly. I mean, I think you do all of those things. Right. But I think that your opposition has to be, like, the precedent that allows this system to continue to operate was broken. So here's an alternative. You can either wait and nominate him when another Supreme Court justice needs to be replaced, and we can consider Merrick Garland along with him. We either get a group deal or we yeah. get nobody.
I'm in favor of that.
Because I don't think that they should allow the Republicans to play this game, because they'll do this every time then.
Totally.
What if we just never consider another judge during a Democratic presidency right. and they're all now appointed by Republicans? That's not how this should be played.
Right.
And even if you're a Democrat who agrees with all of his idiot ideas, you should be like, fuck you for robbing a democratically elected government that was also, unlike this Republican government, popularly elected
right.
of their right to make a decision about replacing a judge in the time that they were supposed to.
Yeah.
Because replacing Scalia with a more progressive judge would not have been some sort of like, it's not like the seats in the Supreme Court are like tied to the ideology that the person held.
No.
The country was getting more progressive. So yes. that would have represented a change that the country was experiencing.
Yes.
And the next person on this court to go is probably a progressive judge.
Yeah.
And in that case, you know, Trump would have had the right to appoint his own justice as president of the United States this time. But this is not how this gets played.
No.
And I think that they are fools if they let this go through just because he's a legitimate human being.
I agree.
Because that misses the whole point.
Yeah.
We're going to also tell you why he's an asshole.
Right.
In case you were wondering, in case you needed that under your belt as
yeah.
well. He's going to be bad for women's rights. We have never, by the way, had like more sneaky anti-abortion measures like trying to make their way into the Supreme Court in our history.
Right.
States are getting real sneaky with their laws that are restricting contraception coverage, that are restricting yep. women's right to choose, that are restricting funding that goes to institutions that provide abortions.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and he has never ruled explicitly on abortion rights, but he has, his record shows very clearly that he has come down on the side of allowing people to discriminate against women and, you know, women's health care
right.
In the past. So he did rule on the Sebelius versus Hobby Lobby case.
Uh-huh.
You might recall that case where Hobby Lobby wanted to stop their employees from getting contraception coverage,
right,
even though the ACA mandated
right.
it.
Yeah.
In his ruling, he claimed that the ACA forced Hobby Lobby to, quote, violate their religious faith by covering birth control, that their, quote, religion teaches them to be gravely wrong. I want to remind you, Hobby Lobby is a corporation.
Yeah.
It's not a religious institution.
No.
It's not like the other case that he also
ruled
this way on.
Well, I'm sure he
also
thinks
Little Sisters
corporations are people, too,
well,
I would assume.
Clearly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Hobby Lobby doesn't have the right to have
religious
convictions because they're not a person. No. They're a corporation.
Yeah.
They're a company.
Yeah.
That like they're
required
not even
to give their employees
healthcare. Exactly. Like, is it like, can I then, because of religious reasons, not provide my employees who are Republicans with healthcare because I disagree with their ideology? Like,
right.
that's just not how things work. In any case, that's in his decision, he incorrectly describes birth control drugs and devices as having the effect of destroying a fertilized human egg.
That is not true.
That's not how even morning after pills work. So literally go fuck yourself. If you
yeah.
don't even understand the medicine that you're describing here,
yeah.
then you really shouldn't be in a position to rule on it.
Yeah.
But he made a similar ruling on the Little Sisters of the Poor versus Burwell case, where he joined a dissenting opinion that also challenged the contraception mandate, claiming that it was a burden on the plaintiff's free exercise of religion. That was a very similar. Those cases both we've heard about, we've talked about before.
Yeah,
they were very similar
cases. Since within the last, you know,
exactly.
since the ACA was passed.
There was also, he's very against physician-assisted suicide for reasons I can't quite glean, but he filed an amicus brief in 1996 in a case that was about physician-assisted suicide and wrote in that amicus brief that requiring public hospitals to provide abortions was an instance of, quote, the courts feeling free to override the conscience of healthcare providers, essentially claiming that individual doctors should be able to opt out of medical procedures that they don't, like, ideologically agree with. Not that aren't medically necessary, but that they don't agree with. Like, if I don't agree with screening Republican men for colon cancer, is that, can I just decide that Republican men should die of colon cancer?
Apparently.
Like, go fuck your, anyway.
Yeah.
I'm mad about that. There was also, remember when we were going to stop funding Planned Parenthood because they were illegally selling fetal tissue? A thing that turned out to be fake. And was not a fact? Utah passed a law attempting to permanently defund Planned Parenthood over this fake reason. And most judges were like, go fuck yourself, Utah. But Gorsuch wanted to rehear the case because the law basically prevented patients from using Medicaid dollars on non-abortion procedures at Planned Parenthood. They're already not allowed to use them for abortions.
Yeah, you can't.
That's already terrible.
Yeah.
We've discussed that before.
Yeah.
But this would have prevented them from using Medicaid dollars on non-abortion procedures. So that's just like allowing people to use Medicaid for women's health.
For women's health, exactly.
Procedures of any sort. Based on a false claim that Planned Parenthood was using...
So he's wrong on a lot of levels on
but
this
he didn't
here.
Address the fact that the claim was patently political. It was meant to sort of like inflame a base to get the governor reelected or something like that. He didn't address any of the political implications of that case. He was just sort of like,
care.
Utah can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
So in any case, obviously, it's very unlikely that he will hear a case that is explicitly about overturning Roe v. Wade. What's more likely, I mean, right off the bat, that would require a state to pass a blatantly unconstitutional law that would involve years of court battles, that would ignore public opinion, which now favors the right to choose by a large margin. I mean, that's not an actual likely route for this to go. What's more likely is he'll start hearing cases like that law in Texas, like those laws in North Carolina or whatever,
where they have to be like hospitals and then there's only like one in the entire state of Texas.
And they need admitting
privileges. And
somebody
has to drive 100 hours to go. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, laws that require you to like get an ultrasound before you can get an abortion.
And all signs point to that he would come down on the side of upholding those laws.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because those, despite the fact that he's not ruled explicitly on abortion, would fall in line with rulings that he's made in the past on healthcare that we just talked about. So that's some concern. There's also the fact that he seems to have a pretty black and white understanding of disability rights. So the disability rights laws are written in such a way that they are essentially supposed to encourage a case-by-case analysis of how you accommodate people with disabilities. The laws are written so that people with disabilities are accommodated in whatever way they need to be given sort of an equal
There's
shot.
No blanket because way to accommodate people
different.
Because they're all bingo. Right.
So there was one case where an assistant professor at KSU was diagnosed with cancer and got a bone marrow transplant and asked for a short leave of absence because there was a flu epidemic when she was supposed to return to campus. So she took a semester off and asked to kind of like push her return back.
Yeah, she's not trying to have the flu while she's
recovering from a bone marrow transplant.
Right.
KSU said no, she sued. And because so under the law as it stands, a leave request like that is determined on a case-by-case basis. And it's basically determined on the basis of whether it provides an undue burden on the employer. Now, he ruled on the case before any evidence could be presented on whether this was an undue burden on KSU, which is a federally funded employer that has millions of dollars.
Right,
it's an it's a well-endowed institution.
Sure.
He ruled that her request for additional leave was unreasonable because showing up was an essential function of the job. But she'd been there for 15 years and was not intending to not return as soon as she could do it with her health in mind.
She was trying to just not
die. She was trying to not die.
Yeah.
But he seemed to think that there was like a pretty black and white understanding of that. A similar thing happened where after a number of officials had ruled that a young autistic boy needed to be placed in a residential school program because he was not getting his life skills weren't progressing. So he was gaining sort of academic skills, but he wasn't gaining life skills.
Yeah.
And with autistic children, a lot of
the time,
goal is making sure they can live productive lives.
Right. And
interact with people
do
things.
Many of them are great academically.
Well, exactly. A lot of autistic people are like fucking geniuses at some subject, but they can't like do normal life things. And that's what the schools are supposed to help us all develop. Because schools are to socialize us, you guys.
Yeah.
They're not so that you understand arithmetic. It's nice if everyone understands arithmetic, but that's because for socializing purposes, it helps when everyone knows arithmetic. It's not because arithmetic is more important than socializing.
Right.
That's the whole fucking purpose of school.
If we all knew arithmetic but couldn't interact with each other, then that would be bad.
That'd be a bad thing. It wouldn't matter if we knew arithmetic in that world, because we wouldn't be able to do... we're social creatures, and we wouldn't be able to cooperate in a normal way.
Right.
In any case, he reversed the finding. And this was like a hearing officer, an administrative law judge, and a federal district court had all ruled that this kid deserved to be put in a residential school program. He reversed the opinion because this student was making progress towards educational goals, and he felt like... the American with Disabilities Act just didn't require them to go above and beyond. It was just like a lack of understanding of what the disability, and what the law was, the intention of the law.
The intention of the law, and I'm sure in the misunderstanding of the disability means that he obviously did not pay attention to what I assume was testimony about what the disability itself was.
His understanding of the law is now under review by the Supreme Court because it's an outdated understanding of how the disability law is intended to work, because it's supposed to help everyone become productive members of society, not just like fucking be lines in the sand that people have to meet standards that you can't even empathize with because you're just a random judge.
Well, my guess is that he probably, at least in part, the reason that he ruled the way that he did on both of these cases is that he probably just has like a base level hatred for these laws.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, I think, what this is all kind of
which is not great. Like, that's what is concerning about these two. Like, obviously, each of these individual cases is problematic, but, like, I think the undercurrent is that he would probably always rule against these people, regardless of what the case is, because
he continues along with the women's health thing. It's laws that protect disadvantaged classes of people.
Right.
Are laws that he clearly doesn't... He wants people to have a high standard to meet, and he doesn't respect the underlying reason for it.
And that's what you've been hearing a lot of the Democrats say. But that besides their issue with him just taking over a stolen seat, is that he has often ruled against the little guy.
Exactly.
And so you're starting to see that narrative take shape a little bit, and it's a correct narrative.
Yeah.
It's not enough... on its face to be able to, you know, like we said, to vote no on a Supreme Court nominee. But like we said, that's not even the question. But yeah.
And as far in terms of gun rights, his record is a little bit less clear on this issue. But gun rights advocates are very pro him over this one case. He has in the past upheld convictions for illegal gun possession and by convicted felons, which is what this case pertains to. But the case that's making the gun rights community real excited is a case in which he was part of a panel that heard an appeal in which a defendant had violated the terms of his release for a 2009 conviction of armed robbery that banned him from possessing firearms. And Gorsuch ruled against granting the appeal with the other judges because he claimed he had to follow precedent, even if it was wrong precedent, literally. But he said that the government should have to prove that the defendant knew... the defendant knew of his prior felony conviction, which was a new mandate placed. So normally you'd have to prove that the defendant knew they had a gun because, you know, in order to have breaking a law, they had to know they were having the thing that caused them to break a law. But it didn't require them to know that they were also felons. Because this guy was claiming that because a judge told him something sort of unclear at the time, he wasn't aware that he was a felon.
Got it.
But he was... But he was a felon with a gun that also had like a scratched off serial number. Like he had a black market gun. And the reason that he thought that they should have to prove that this guy knew he was a felon and knew he had a gun was because there was a long tradition of widespread lawful gun ownership by private individuals in this country.
Oh, yeah, that's not great.
So that's not great. No. He's kind of a Second Amendment nut.
Yeah.
He's like, we said before, he's like very against assisted suicide, which is bizarre.
Yeah. That's like a big thing for him.
And the Hobby Lobby ruling is relevant to that since he sided with them because they were seeking a religious exemption for a mandate. The idea of allowing private companies to seek religious exemptions does also pertain to the assisted suicide thing, because that's a similar thing where they can just be like, we don't cover it because we don't believe in it.
Yeah.
You can't just decide which medical procedures you do and don't believe in.
No.
That's like not how medicine works. Personally decide which medical procedures to undergo.
Yes,
that but your company can't be like, oh, we don't believe in birth control, so you can't have it. We don't believe. I mean, they legally can now, but that's a dick move.
Right.
It's a dick move.
It's because of this guy that they can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In any case, Here is who is on hashtag Team Spine.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked about that last week. I don't know that
I've been tweeting a little Team Spine.
You have been tweeting.
Yeah, this is the Team Spine thing is new. Team Spine is the new hashtag that's
the Democrats who are
taking doing the right
principled stands on things.
Right.
There's not necessarily enough of them.
No,
but there's more of them than maybe I would have potentially guessed.
I know it's there. This list is both very disturbing and very heartening. Because
yes.
I had forgotten how many principled senators there were and also how many unprincipled Democratic
right.
senators there were.
Yeah.
So there are 8 people who have affirmatively stated they will vote no on the Gorsuch
right.
nomination. We'll read their names because they're important.
Yes.
That's Tammy Baldwin, Cory Booker, Sherrod Brown, Kirsten Gillibrand, Ed Markey, Jeff Merkley, Elizabeth Warren, and Ron Wyden.
Yes.
Here, there's a much longer list of 24 senators
that are
who have suggested they might.
There.
They have released statements that are critical of Gorsuch, but they haven't said specifically that they will not
right.
consider him.
Yeah.
On that list is our 2 senators, Bernie Sanders,
yes.
Chuck Schumer, who I
yeah.
don't trust as far as I can
no.
throw him,
well, what
and
I have
Al Franken. So a few people
right.
that I feel like are turnable.
Right. Well, and what a lot of these people did is say something to the effect that we think he should get a hearing, we think he should get a vote, but he should have to reach the 60-vote threshold.
Yes.
So what they're doing is they are basically only saying things that are, fact-based.
Right.
Basically,
we should
because,
follow
like,
procedure.
Follow procedure, right.
Yeah.
So they fall into this category, and that doesn't necessarily mean they need turn. It just means that they sort of issued a vague statement.
They are
about
people to maybe consider calling so that they can,
right.
when they do
right.
get to go up
the
for
first,
a vote,
the
say,
first eight,
I got 85,000 million
right,
phone
exactly.
calls about
the
this.
First
I can't
eight
do this.
Names that we read were people who just like were immediate,
were
like
fuck
no.
this.
Like, this is,
yeah.
this is not happening
yeah.
on our watch.
Exactly.
These next 20-some people probably seem like they are also in that camp, but are just not necessarily publicly saying
yes.
so at this moment.
That's what I would hope, at least.
Yeah, because Bernie Sanders
yeah,
is on here, and
right.
there's no way he's voting for this guy.
No.
Like, it's
right.
just not
going to happen.
Hasn't said
anything
Al Franken
definitive.
Is not voting for this guy. But their statements on
yeah.
it were just sort of, like, not as, like full stop, no, I'm not voting for him.
The way that I know that we're really, like, getting somewhere in the world is that Dianne Feinstein has come out swinging on a number of issues of late, and one of them was this.
One of them is this, yeah.
She said that she wanted to get phone calls, and boy, did she.
Yeah.
She has gotten, you can't get through to her office on any day, at any time, in any location.
She was unclear as to whether she was going to vote for Jeff Sessions or not, and then literally days later,
released the most scathing statement.
Just, like, totally dragged him.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, like, she, I don't necessarily like her, but she took a note.
Yeah,
so,
she took a note.
So you can call these people and get them to take a note.
Yeah. That's what their job is to take a note.
Yeah.
Their job, they're there to represent you.
Yeah.
They're not there to represent themselves.
Yeah.
They are just voters like you.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, in some of these cases, it would help, you know, like it is helpful if people start to come out strongly in one way because it helps kind of drive the narrative a little
yes,
bit.
Yes,
so,
it's better if there's company in
exactly,
your
yeah, in your dissent.
You, right.
So if you want to start calling the California senators, the,
right.
You know, Chuck Schumer, that would be a big one.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to start calling really.
Or go
like,
to Chuck Schumer's house. That's a popular
right,
thing
that's
to
a popular
do,
activity, yeah. If you want to call the Vermont senators, if you,
mm-hmm.
like it can only help.
Yeah.
And it would actually help if some moderates got in there. So
yeah.
if you have moderate senators, call them.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
The Dianne Feinstein thing is really meaningful because she's very centrist. And for her to be coming out swinging on some of these things,
yeah.
she said earlier this week, and she hasn't said how she's going to vote on this, but she said, it seems like the court's doing fine with 8 to me. And I was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah
Dianne
right?
Feinstein.
Yeah.
Doing it. There's 15 people who have made very noncommittal statements where
yeah.
they were not critical. They were just sort of like, we'll look at his record. But none of them have said that they're going to vote yes. No Democrat has said that they're going to vote right.
Right.
I mean, that would be a fool move.
It certainly would be.
This is the list
although
of people.
Although Heidi Heitkamp is a fool, so
right.
you
I mean, I was
going to
say. Like, but here's some people that I feel like we can totally get on board here.
Yeah.
Chris Murphy.
Yes.
That asshole's not going to vote for this guy if you let him.
No.
If you don't let him.
Agreed.
You know, I think that's. Fuck. Tim Kaine is on this list.
Yeah.
Fuck
buzz
him.
Buzz off. Yeah.
Call him if he's your senator and be like, what the fuck is your problem,
yeah, exactly.
asshole?
Yeah.
Say it in those words. I don't even care. Tell
yeah.
him to go screw himself.
Right?
I mean, I feel like you're probably not going to have much luck with, you know, the Joe Manchins and
yeah,
Claire McCaskills of
right,
the world.
Exactly.
But, like, you know, call him anyway. Michael
yeah.
Bennett needs to be told what to do because
right.
he never knows.
Well,
so
you
call
know what?
Him.
If seven We're still fine if 7 of these losers peel off.
Yeah.
But so, that's all we can afford.
That's all we can afford. So call anyone who's anyone.
Right.
Literally just call your senators. Right.
Don't waste your time calling Joe Manchin or Heidi Heitkamp.
I mean, if you live in their state, you're not so busy that you can't call them. Right. West Virginia isn't, you don't have too many representatives to call. No. You have like 3 representatives right. or 4 representatives yeah, in the whole exactly. state. Like, I'm not worried that you don't have the energy. Like, if you live in North Dakota, call Heidi Heitkamp. You yes, live there.
Exactly.
There's only like 7 people right. in the whole state, so maybe she'll listen to you. I don't know. But I mean, just like, don't be disappointed when they are asked.
Right, exactly.
But, like,
yes.
Maggie Hassan, call Come that on. Bitch. Like,
yeah, right?
Get her flip.
Call that bitch.
Like, I don't want to hear.
Let's start that hashtag.
Yeah.
Exactly. Call that bitch.
I want. Yeah. I feel like I need a male version of that saying, though, yeah. so I don't feel like I'm just being misogynistic. Because I want to yeah. use that hashtag for some of these other assholes.
Well, we can use that for all of them.
I mean, that's true.
We can
yeah.
use call that bitch for Joe Manchin for all I
yeah.
care.
Yeah, why not? Exactly. Like, call that bitch for Tim Kaine.
Yeah.
He certainly Seriously. Needs it.
Yeah.
So in any case, as all of this is shaping up, Trump has decided to tell Mitch McConnell that if he needs to go use the nuclear option, to just go ahead.
So just do it, right.
Yeah, because that'll help matters.
Right. Mitch McConnell seems like he would be reluctant to do so.
He's shown himself to be lacking almost any principles, though, in That's the last few months. So, I yes. mean, I feel like...
But he does who like am I to fancy himself as, like, you know, an institutionalist.
Yeah.
Now, you're right. He doesn't seem to have any principles that I could think of, like, literally one of them.
Nope.
So, who knows?
He's not 100% for killing journalists.
Right, no, he's
He is not. Only 95% right. pro-killing journalists.
But this is something that he has sort of, like, signaled in the past that he
is
would
very
not
yeah.
want to do. And that's understandably so. The reason that, besides the fact that, obviously, this could come back to bite you when you do not have the presidency,
mm-hmm.
is that this is the way that we get Supreme Court justices who are not
wildly
insane people.
Wild ideologues.
You can argue that some have been on the court.
We
you
still
can argue
do get
that
those people.
Still, right, exactly. You can argue that there are some on the court currently. You could argue that Justice Thomas is one. But
you would argue that.
You
in
would
fact,
argue
if
that.
You were called
but,
to.
But in the sense that, like, there are people
Justice
who
Thomas
are,
got 60 votes
right, exactly.
to get into that seat.
And there are people...
60 dumb votes, but
there
he got
are,
him.
There are people out there who are judges in the world who would not be able to get 60 votes.
Yes.
And the reason that you have the 60 vote threshold is so you don't end up with those people on the yeah. Supreme Court. So it's not just that you don't want it to come back and bite you in the ass. It's that you also don't want the Supreme Court to be stacked with literally insane people.
Lunatics. Because that's a
right.
that's also a lifetime appointment.
Right, exactly.
So
there's multiple reasons that this is dangerous.
Yes.
For Mitch McConnell. And I think he, while having no principles, also sort of like understands like some facts.
Let's hope.
Not enough of them,
no.
certainly. But I think he gets this.
Right.
He's been in the Senate long enough to know.
If he doesn't get this by now, get that fucker out of here.
Right, exactly.
He's been yeah. unqualified for far
Call
too
that
long.
Bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Call that bitch. So yeah, in any case, this is it I will be interested to see what he does in this situation. It does
yeah.
sound like the White House and the establishment GOP are trying a new thing this week. You'll notice the flurry of executive actions has stopped. That's because Rince Priebus was like, literally stop this right now. And they were like, I don't know. And he was like, no assholes.
Right.
This is making us look like fools.
Right. There were still some garbage ones last week that
yes.
I don't even know if we have on here. There was
no.
There was some deregulation
yeah.
ones.
Yeah.
There was
the one where you had to...
for every
you,
regulation
for every,
you had
to
cut
get rid
two.
Of two.
That is not... Can't be... That can't be real. It can't be
Also,
real.
it doesn't say what kind of regulation.
No, it
so
doesn't
you
matter.
Can just cut any fake regulation
any.
You want.
Got
so,
it. Anyway.
In any case... but it's we're going to talk about it in a second, but there's some shifts happening right now after the 2 whirlwind weeks of insanity that made everyone look stupid in the
yeah.
whole government.
Yeah. The thinking people are attempting to prevail in that White
yeah.
House
I
would
don't think there are enough of them or that
no.
they think
or
very
that they're
much
thinking
themselves.
Enough.
Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But,
in comparison, the thinking people.
They're the thinking people.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with all of this. It could
Sorry.
Be that there's suddenly some, understanding of why a Mitch McConnell might not want to upset all of the decorum that used to dominate the Senate, just in case there's a turnover at some point.
Yeah.
But maybe he doesn't care. He's a million years old. Yeah. Maybe he wants to go out with a bang.
Yeah, right.
You know, why not? Meanwhile, the Democrats are doing our favorite thing today.
Yeah, like as of our recording of this podcast and your listening of this.
They are fake filibustering the DeVos nomination.
That's right.
They can't filibuster.
They're in like our, right now, probably 13 or 14 of a non-filibuster, a talkathon.
A talkathon. I love these. This is what all of the things that we've been calling filibusters of late have been.
Yeah.
This is just where you hold the Senate floor and refuse to give it up.
Right, because the Senate, the Democrats cannot filibuster this because it only takes a simple majority to pass this nomination. They only need 51 votes, so we don't have 51 votes.
And they only have 50.
So they only have 50. Right. So right now, they are just literally yammering on about how awful Betsy DeVos is, and they're going to do it for 24 hours. And you know what? They can fill it.
Yeah, there's enough.
There's 24 hours of awful of Betsy DeVos.
There's at least 24 hours of grizzly bear jokes to make.
For sure.
For sure.
And Chris Murphy really got to one.
Yes,
too.
Exactly.
What was his exact
quote?
Because he took the...
Took the 4 a.m. shift. Yeah, the chances you'll be watching are bested only by the chances a grizzly bear walks into your kid's school today. So Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski flipped.
Right.
That was the big news of last week.
Right.
But
so
that only brings us to 50.
Right, exactly. And the Democrats are sort of like at least claiming publicly that part of this talkathon is to convince another one. There was a big push last week to flip Pat Toomey because somehow or another he got deemed
the news of how we're getting people who are flippable in any of these situations is very mysterious.
It's unclear because he had only been on record like vehemently supporting her, so I don't know exactly how that
came to
pass. I
feel like every time, like if I currently posted something on Facebook that was like, you know, Marco Rubio is flipped. Like, that could easily go viral, and he could just get a flurry of calls from all over the country tomorrow.
Because that's what happened to Pat Toomey.
Yeah. Pat Toomey, who had no intention of flipping, got phone calls all day last week.
And this is a sort of depressing thing to bring to you, because I know that everyone was really excited when Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins declared that they were going to vote against her, is that there are a lot of reports that those two waited to say that they were going to do that only because they sort of felt like they had to politically, like to being from the states that they were and like receiving the amount of calls that they did. But they actually waited to confirm that the other 50 were fully whipped and there was no chance that any of them could break and that they had Mike Pence to come in and break the tie. I believe that, too. It's sort of upsetting because it was really exciting when we found out that they were going to vote against her last week. But perhaps it's a lot of nothing, which is unfortunate. So there are a lot of people go ahead.
Just having enough doesn't do enough to save them politically then.
No. Well,
this is a meaningless gesture.
No, and this is still... No, you're absolutely right. And it's still embarrassing because this has never happened for... the vice president has never had to break a tie here. Well, and that's also partially because you've always needed 60 votes. Right. So there's never been a tie. But, like, this is still embarrassing. Like, the fact that Mike Pence is going to have to come in and save the day for, like, a shit nominee that everyone on earth knows is a shit nominee, including all 50 of the people who are going to vote for her, is sad on...
Many
basically
levels.
All the levels.
This is not
because America knows she's garbage.
Yes,
right,
for sure.
Like if you have eyes and ears and were alive during her confirmation hearings,
then you're aware of her garbage.
You know that she is not only unqualified to be holding the job that she's been nominated for before, but she's actually a buffoon.
Yeah, well, she's unqualified to hold most jobs because she's literally just a rich person.
She's just a rich person who's giving money to the GOP.
Who's giving money to the GOP.
Yeah.
She's not even, like, even Jeff Sessions, who is unqualified for ideological reasons because he, like, has brain issues with understanding equality as a concept.
Right.
Has, like, served in the Senate and is, like, aware fleetingly of the law.
Right.
Like, that he meets the most basic qualification
for being
the attorney general.
She's a person who's going to be, like, dealing with America's public schools, who has been attempting to, like, derail public schools.
One has no personal experience with public schools because she and her children are all in private schools and are just trying to funnel public money into those private schools.
Correct.
So that we can all forget about evolution, apparently.
Right, yes. To what is it she wanted to use the schools to bring in God's law or something like that? What sort of, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something that ridiculous. I mean, anyway.
Yeah. So in any case, that the big embarrassment beyond the Betsy DeVos vote of the week is the travel ban.
It's on hold, guys.
back on hold to the degree that they have stopped enforcing it.
Yes.
Like, they were told, like, literally just go back to what you were doing before.
Yes, exactly.
And that is a judge on Friday, a federal judge, halted it. Trump was pissed. Tweeted about a so-called judge.
As if
he, like, he's a real judge. And not only is he a real judge, he was appointed by George W. Bush.
Right, exactly. You cannot like him, but, like, he is an actual judge with real authority.
Who was appointed by the president's own party.
Right.
But
hardly.
Exactly.
Technically his own party, but doesn't look like his own party anymore anyway. But
The government filed an emergency request to resume the ban on Sunday, and the appeals court was like, no.
Right. They said, you have to file legal briefs with us, and then we're going to hear it with our panel, and then we're going to decide on it.
Yeah.
So
this is going to the Supreme Court, I think.
For 100%.
I mean, it has to.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens there, because they're just probably going to tie on it and no one will know what to do. But hopefully we have one conscientious objector, because they've never had to rule on something this absurd in the recent configuration.
It's ridiculous, yeah.
It's like one thing to rule on like random like Obamacare nonsense. Yeah. But this is like, I think what sat so poorly about this with everyone, this is like truly in violation of at least the principles that you pay lip service to, even if you're a Republican.
Yes.
You know, like that's what's so troubling about this is it's not... I mean, it's troubling if just on the face of it, because it's troubling as an idea and plan. But it's even if you were someone who thinks that bizarre, you know, sort of like intervention of that sort is necessary and keeps us safe or whatever they're claiming this does, the way this was done is a violation of what the whole sort of American experiment is supposed to be.
Yes.
You know? And so I feel like even if you are somebody who's like a little bit dim on the in terms of the details here, the way this happened feels so like in opposition to the core values of what you were taught in the public schools makes America America.
Yeah.
That it's like hard to even understand.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like normal, you know, sort of Republican bigotry.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of bigotry that is not even what the Republicans stand for usually.
Yeah.
They stand for, you know, I say this all the time. They're genteel bigots.
Right.
They come up with like crazy reasons that they have to be bigoted because of things that seem like common sense but aren't at all and, you know, stuff like that. This is not what this is.
No, it's not.
This is hardcore bigotry.
Yes, exactly.
That is a direct violation of the very reason America exists.
Yeah,
the reason we committed a genocide to found America is so that we could have a place for genocide victims to come. In any case.
Yeah. One of the things that we're seeing out of this administration, and you see it when, you know, Trump gets angry at the courts and calls them so-called judges. You see it in how Trump and Sean Spicer are talking about, you know, how the press should just go along and listen to them and everything. You're seeing, and you also, we saw it really front and center last week with the firing of Sally Yates, is that the Trump administration just thinks that now that they are in power, they should just be able to do whatever they want willy-nilly, and everyone should go along with it, and nobody should ask any questions, and that's not life.
That's not how things work.
It's not how things work.
If they were ever wondering why nothing gets accomplished in the U.S. government, it's because there's too many, often, but unnecessary checks and balances.
Exactly, yes. So last week, on Monday, early in the day... Well, actually, not even early. This played out over the span of a couple hours. This happened fast.
Brent literally texted me and was like, and by the way, if you had asked me if this happened 3 weeks ago, I would have said yes.
I know, because last Monday.
Week felt like the longest
This was
weekend.
One of the last additions to the doc, because I had a moment of like, holy fuck.
Yeah. Well, and if you had asked me if we covered this 7 times already, I probably would have said yes, because I feel like this story feels like it happened months ago because of everything that's happened since. But literally Brent texted me at like 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock or something and was like, are you paying attention to what's happening? And I was like, yes. And I heard that Sally Yates stood up to the White House.
Yes.
And he was like, no,
no,
did you hear that
she's
gone?
She got fired.
And
yeah,
it was
exactly.
like every hour there was a new
it
update about
fast.
This story.
Yes. Yeah. So she was the acting attorney general. She was kept on by the Trump administration because she has worked at the Justice Department for over 27 years. She's worked, obviously, over in that span of time for both Republican and Democrats.
Right.
And she was basically, they kept her on because they liked her.
Yeah.
So they were obviously going to replace her. I mean, she was she's going to be replaced by Jeff Sessions or, I mean, God willing,
hopefully
someone
not
Jeff Sessions, but probably Jeff Sessions.
Right.
So she was sort of just only there to do the job of the attorney general in the weeks that it took to get Jeff Sessions confirmed. She claimed on Monday that she was not going to defend this Muslim ban in the courts. Trump was obviously not happy about that, so he fired her.
Just like in what was immediately compared to Nixon's
right.
What day was his massacre? I'm confused because we started talking about the Monday night massacre.
But it was when he fired all of his
Friday
attorneys generals because they would not go and fire the guy who was going to basically, you know, bag Nixon for Watergate. Until they got to, they fired everybody until they got to Robert Bork, who was the one who ultimately decided that he was going to do it, which was one of the reasons why Bork did not become a Supreme Court justice.
Exactly.
But anyway.
Yeah, that. But so in any case, Yates has a reputation for being very above politics. That's, you know, she was somebody who had been confirmed, I think, with 84 votes in 2015.
Yes.
In a Republican-controlled Senate.
Liked.
She's well-liked.
And she was well-liked for one very specific reason, actually, which is funny because this reason came about due to Jeff Sessions. Mm-hmm. Because Jeff Sessions asked her at her hearing if she would stand up to a presidential administration if she felt like they were going against, like, the Constitution.
Right, if she believed that their actions were unlawful, which is interesting because he was definitely in his mind thinking about
the Obama administration
and whether or not they could probably, like, enforce anti-ACA rulings and things like that.
And she gave an answer that they all really loved because she was like, yes, of course, like, my duty is to the Constitution. It's not to the president. It's not to the administration.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah. Where does this leave
getting fired for
Monsieur Sessions?
Attempting to uphold the Constitution.
Yeah.
Yeah, but really, where does it leave Sessions?
I mean, he's been a Trump supporter for a long time.
Yeah.
But is there a way, understanding that this is how the Trump administration operates, for him to be independent?
Well, right, exactly. That's the question.
And obviously, it's something he believes is important because he asked the fucking question.
Right.
But again, people with no principles.
Yeah.
Jeff Sessions, a man who I would have previously thought is too principled. Principled beyond a shadow of a doubt in a way that makes
fucking
sense.
Right, exactly.
It turns out none.
Doesn't happen.
None of the principles.
Yeah. At least he didn't poison her.
So true. Yeah, at least she didn't just die a mysterious death the day that she stood up to Donald Trump.
I know.
P.S. Like, that would have even been less suspicious than what he did.
Seriously.
But he said the acting attorney general, Sally Yates, has betrayed the Department of Justice by refusing to enforce a legal order designed to protect citizens of the United States. The use of betrayed
is
interesting
and
concerning.
A lot of people in the, and because that was the White House official statement. The word betrayed sort of made people really uneasy.
It fashions her as a traitor, which is not what happened here.
Yeah, disagreeing with the president in favor of the Constitution does not a traitor make.
No, that makes a court case. a court case makes.
Yeah.
That I think is a concerning framing of this situation.
Yeah.
But I mean, not surprising framing of it, just a concerning one. Everything's concerning these days.
Exactly.
None of it's surprising.
Yeah, it's concerning times.
Oh, but here was something fun that wasn't concerning.
Yeah.
There was a bodega blackout. I made that term up, by the way. That's not what we were calling
it.
Yeah, I like
it.
A bunch of Yemeni business owners who own bodegas in and around New York City shut down to protest the travel ban.
Right. Well, and it was a really genius protest, actually, because it was basically just intended
to be like, this is what immigrants do.
Right, exactly. It was intended to prove what... you know, what that travel ban affects.
Exactly.
If none of those people
and
can
also,
come here.
And also the value that that community provides.
Exactly.
You know, bodegas, if you're not from New York City, are sort of like corner stores.
Right.
That are a kind of like important part of city life. It's where people go buy coffee in the morning. It's where you get a bagel in the morning.
Right.
It's where you get whatever random last minute item you
it's
need.
It's problematic to not have those open.
Right. It's sort of like a whole culture of New York.
Right.
Like, so to... And New Yorkers were very supportive of this... closing because this protest was important to them as well, but it was essentially meant to be like, this is what New York looks like without people
without
from the countries you're banning
countries.
Here you know, a lot of the bodegas are owned by Yemeni immigrants
and over 1,000 businesses
and then they went and had a rally and everyone was pretty like, and then people came to the rally. It seemed like a very nice
I'm into it
But so it was actually, I think, a very successful protest, so hopefully it's sort of interesting to see some of the kind of like moments of solidarity from groups of people that you don't normally like see doing collective action this way. Like the same thing with the taxi workers union. You know, the thing that got Uber in so much trouble was that they basically acted as scab labor during a taxi worker strike. But you rarely see the taxi workers take a unified politicized action that way.
Yeah.
But they were just like, fuck this. The taxi workers are primarily immigrants. And yeah. this is a ban that sort of affects the very heart of what a lot of industries in New York City operate on the basis of. And that's yeah. the same thing with the bodegas. Like, yeah. it's sort of interesting to see some of these communities start to kind of like politicize in interesting ways. Because this is, I would not have otherwise thought that the right. bodega owning right, community yeah. was a political,
right.
you know, was able to yeah. operate on well, a unified political basis.
This obviously took a great deal of organization yeah. too. I mean, they just didn't decide that morning that they were all going to like collectively not go to work. So
no,
like,
exactly.
They're, you know, that's great that they
yeah,
you know,
no, it's,
went to the effort to like, put something like this together.
No, it's and kind of exciting.
Also, they lost a lot of money, obviously, by yeah. not being open. Like, but it was not as if they...
Cities are, like, not fucking around right now.
Yeah, no.
This is not. A moment where I feel like cities are really stepping up.
Yeah.
Because this... And especially for a city, like, the big cities, cities like New York, cities like L.A., where, yeah. you know, immigration is a part of our story all the time.
Right.
Like, these are things... These are sort of, like, attacks on the very, like, sort of fabric of the city. They're yeah. not just, like, theoretical attacks. And right. so it's sort of, like, important, I think. And this was a roundly applauded move, even though it was inconvenient if you needed to go to a bodega that day. Right. But it was a sort of roundly applauded move because I think people in these cities are like,
yeah.
what can we do? What protests will work? We'll right. try anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of executive orders and
this
shitty ones in particular.
Perhaps... My favorite story of
I know.
Last week.
My favorite story is coming, but this sure. is up there.
There were good ones.
There were some certainly. Good ones. This, in continuing the leakiest White House in history,
totally.
Tales of leaks yeah. coming out of the White House.
Yeah, we're going to get a lot of good gossip from this White
this
House,
is,
and that we like.
Of course.
Yeah. Last week, as we, one of the big stories that's actually going on right now is that we, last week, Steve Bannon got a seat on the National Security Council. Right. That is not supposed to happen.
No.
There's not supposed
just
to be
like a random civilian to
right,
get.
There's not supposed to be political people on the National yeah. Security Council for obvious reasons.
Yes.
So Trump signed an executive order last week that got Steve Bannon a seat on that council
and kicked off people who were
off,
actually
right,
the
exactly.
National Intelligence
off, like,
Director,
you know,
yeah.
Joint Chiefs of Staff,
and the Joint
and
Chiefs
stuff
of Staff,
like
yeah.
that. Right. Exactly. Not great.
No.
Guys.
Not what you're looking for.
Also, besides the fact that it's illegal. Because right. if you're going to be on that council, you have to be a person
yeah,
who
it was
has
funny,
been approved by the Senate.
After we
so,
signed this executive order, we learned that the right. Senate has to approve
yes.
a non, you know, yeah. a political appointee
right.
being
but
added
what we
to the
found
council.
Out through the leaky White House is that Trump had no idea that's what he was signing.
Nope.
Did
he
not
was just
know.
Being handed papers
just
by
handing,
Steve Bannon. He thought, yeah, I'll sign this.
Yeah,
Steve's a good guy.
Exactly. Yep.
And so he had no idea how much power Bannon would accrue with this move.
Right.
He didn't learn about the significance of it until much later.
Right. This did not go through. Reince Priebus, who we talked about this last week, one of those two is not long for that administration.
Yeah. And last
talking,
week it looked like it was Reince,
talking,
but now it's kind of looking
about
like it's Bannon.
Priebus and
Bannon.
Right. Reince Priebus has put together like this, you know, 10-step program or whatever
yeah.
for these, like, executive orders to go through.
Yeah,
because
so that
we, as
they
we
stopped
know,
just
this,
free
right,
will,
exactly.
Like,
because as we know, this,
willy-nilly.
This Muslim ban was not vetted by anybody in the Justice Department. You know, we've gone
or
over,
any
like,
of the
how,
enforcing agencies.
Right. Everything has just been done sort of, like, willy-nilly. So he has put together this, like, okay, all of these
Here's
have to
who
go
needs
through.
To look at this.
Right, exactly. This did not go through that.
Yeah.
Like, it was just,
no, it, was
it
just
sounds
like
it was literally, like, slipped to Trump, like while he was probably like short on sleep.
Yeah,
in the middle
is,
of 10 things.
This
by
is literally
Steve
Bannon,
said,
like
this.
Attempting a coup.
Yes, that's
basically.
Exactly, yeah.
Like
well, a lot of people. That's what a lot of people were calling this
yeah.
actually last week.
Damn it.
That we were, no, oh sorry. just,
Every time
just
I think I come
invented
up with
it.
idea.
yeah.
But yeah, this is coup like behavior.
It totally.
You know, an idiot leads
yeah.
to the downfall of humanity not through his own actions, but
yeah.
because a less idiotic idiot comes in and tries to
right.
use
but
that
we
authority
know
for evil.
What we, besides the fact that it's just sort of like hilarious that Trump is a bumbling fool, like walking around the White House, just like signing anything. Also, that's terrifying. But what's more terrifying about it is that he's signing things that Steve Bannon is giving him. It's
yeah.
not.
And that
I,
no one else is looking at.
I would trust that Brent Priebus, while he might give him something horrible to sign, would right. not give him something like super nefarious.
Right.
Like,
it's being vetted way that, by the proper channels. It's right, like exists exactly. in our current political right. framework. Like, it's just like an eviler right, version of right, our exactly. politics.
Right. Brent Priebus is like a stand-up person in the sort of like Republican world of awfulness.
Right.
Like, he's not trying to sort of like end all of our institutions as we know
no,
them, which is what Steve
to
Bannon
use
is up to.
Our institutions for evil as opposed to ending them. Steve Bannon is trying to end our institutions.
Right, exactly.
Like, I feel like that's the distinction here.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's
so,
yeah, so
that's not great, guys.
That's not great. And it's interesting because it's changed the dynamic between Bannon and Trump, at least in the popular imagination.
Yeah. Well, Trump doesn't like to be embarrassed.
No. And this was very embarrassing.
Yeah.
This is an embarrassing thing to have done to yes. Trump.
Well, and now what do you do, too? Because, like, now you've got all these, you've got Democrats who have introduced a bill to get
right.
him removed. Or, you know, if I were the Democrats, I would say, all right, great, let's have a hearing with Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
Because if he's a person who has to have a hearing, that is not a hearing that okay. the White House wants
no.
to be having. Because...
No.
If you want to see somebody
so
get
many
fucking
cans of
dragged
wine.
To hell, I mean, through a congressional
but this
hearing,
is
like put Steve
this
Bannon
This is so
out.
Many layers of idiotness. Because
yes.
Steve Bannon was literally, is a man with no political experience, who has no government experience, and
no.
was literally just like running an alt-right, you know, white supremacist secret
yeah.
news website.
Yeah, he's writing like fever dream executive orders
yeah.
for like, to create like some sort of like insane new world order. Like, you have to keep an eye on that people.
Exactly. No, and not only that, but he's not someone that Trump has like a long-term relationship with. They're
no,
sort of
they've known each other
is
for
very
like,
new.
Yeah, like
and
less than a year.
He's
ultimately.
On record as saying that Trump is like a dunce that he wants to walk all over
yes.
from before they were friends.
Yes,
so,
he has called Trump a blunt object.
Yes, exactly. In a Vanity Fair interview from before they were friends, he says a lot of not so nice things about Trump and basically lays out his plan to use him as an idiot's tool to get what he wants.
Yes.
Like, this is not a man who hasn't openly stated what he's up to in a way that only an idiot would.
Right.
And, like, the idea that anyone was letting him just sit in a room in a bunker alone, just, like,
writing
bizarre executive
orders,
and then no one was looking at them, and they were all just like, yeah, no, I'll sign that, no problem. Not, I mean, this is embarrassing for Trump, because the whole point is that he's supposed to be a good boss and a good, you know, he's supposed to get character,
right.
you know, like, he's supposed to be a good read of character and all of these things that
yeah.
make him a good TV
hires
boss.
Good people.
He hires good people. He knows
yeah.
how to run a good, create a good institution, whatever his nonsense is. But, like, this is what actually, by the way, is happening at the Trump organization, too.
I'm sure
I mean, there's no way this is not what the Trump organization is also up to. But if he can't even fucking vet a man who's, like, openly declared that he's going to overthrow him. And, like, is, like, willy-nilly signing random executive orders that were
yeah.
written by a man who has no government experience.
Yeah. I mean,
it's
this
like,
is the thing. There,
like, what?
There was a great Time piece recently that, you know, we have talked a lot about Steve Bannon in the sense that he has, like, you know, a lot of, you know, quote, alt-right views, which basically sort of translates to white supremacist views. But what a lot of people don't know about Steve Bannon is that he has, like, a lot of other really, really, really wacky, like, crazy
anti-institutionalist
views. Like, where anti-institutionalist views, where he, like, you know, he has talked about in interviews that he's done before, like, how, you know, every 80 to 100 years we have these big seminal moments in the country, like, where we basically have to, you know, he talked about, like, industrialization, he talked about the Civil War, he talked about World War II, sort of, like, being all of these, like, key moments in society where we either like basically like had to go to war or literally like tear down sort of what America was at the time
right.
and like do some sort of like rebuilding to it. And he basically is talking about wanting to do that now. I mean, he's literally
this
a person
is,
who he wants to destroy America and remake
it
like he wants
yeah.
to. And
it's
some,
I feel like
I, he's
this is such
actual
a
lunatic. He's a true lunatic.
That's such a like also that's such a naive thing to think you could do in this moment and not have it be recreated as something much worse for his ideology than what he like
totally.
There is no world in which
the country is not in
there,
where he is.
No. And
yeah.
there's no world in which you tear down what America was and it comes back and we hate everyone again and it's just white men back in charge.
Yeah.
Once again, like that's not what happens when you tear down this America.
No.
You have the largest generation in US history basically coming up right
yeah.
now and they're like for anyone doing anything.
Yeah.
And they love everyone. And they're
yeah.
trying, and they're very socially conscious. They're very
yeah.
socially responsible. Like, you don't tear down America because
no.
a bunch of old, you know, aging crackpots
no.
wish that white people could have all
right.
the power again,
yeah.
even though we still do, let's
yeah.
be honest. But that's, you don't tear down this America right now and with a youth with a youth movement like what we have now,
yeah,
find yourself in the America right. he's looking for.
Right. But if you want to, like, literally keep yourself up at night,
do not,
terrified, then do some research on Steve Bannon. He is not just a racist.
No, he's so much more than a racist.
Yikes.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
But
oh, on a related note, really quick.
Oh, yes.
Props to Nancy Pelosi,
yes.
who called him a white supremacist not once but twice in a speech. So
we're
she didn't do
it
accidentally.
It, America.
I mean, she's really going.
No, well, he's a white supremacist, and
that's
she finally, someone in politics
right, but
was like.
Too many people have been pussyfooting around it.
Though. I know. Yeah, no.
And calling him a, you know, the.
Well,
you know, the,
that's
the,
why they invented the term alt-right, was
exactly.
so that you wouldn't have to say white supremacist. Yeah. But here's the thing. They're the same thing.
Exactly.
And I, like, I, in my mind, every time I hear alt-right, I just hear white supremacist. It was like that Google filter that you could do where you could just, like, have alt-right replaced with white supremacist in your, like, news feed.
Oh, yeah.
Just to help
yeah.
you understand what was
yeah,
going
like
on.
That. Mm-hmm.
So I've now just been hearing it that way.
Good.
So that's... but in any case, the Times had an interesting article today about how... the Trump team is trying to sort of transition away from these very embarrassing first couple weeks because they were such a shit show. And
yeah.
mostly with Renz Priebus sort of like at the helm. This is, there, we're only 2.5 weeks in and already, like not even two, and, oh no, 3 weeks in, right? I can't even,
yeah.
it feels like 7 months.
January 20th.
It was January 20th.
I think we've had 2 full weeks.
We've had
right?
2 full weeks, maybe 3 full weeks. It's hard to know.
It's hard to know.
I think 2. You guys, I honestly feel like it's
like 2.5
like years of this.
Today's Monday, and it was like 2.5 weeks ago on a Friday.
Good. That's right. where we are.
That's.
But in any case, the shifting power dynamics, even just over the course of this 2 weeks, has been like impossible to keep up with.
It's crazy.
So yeah. I think at the moment, we're in a Renz Priebus moment.
Right.
Where he is finally kind of
well,
wrestling.
We tried the Steve Bannon moment.
That was not a great moment for anyone. He's trying to wrestle control back from Steve Bannon and go back to like having a plan that
right.
allows other Republicans to keep their heads up.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how that transpires. Yeah. That's we have to though keep our eyes on the prize here, guys. We can't let a fallback to politics as we normally know it make us forget.
Right. Exactly.
What's
yeah.
happening?
Because I think what,
this is still an unprecedented
right, right.
moment.
What Renz Priebus wants to do is sort of, I think, do these things in a more
sugarcoated.
Covert way and sugarcoated
the
way.
The Cheney
and,
way.
Exactly. And like, and make
the Patriot
and make
Act
the administration
way.
Function in a more sort of like classic,
yeah, a more
way
traditional
an administration
manner.
Would. And that totally makes sense.
Yes.
But it also is going to make it a little bit more difficult for us to sort of. Have the same level of rage that I think
right,
we're having
because
right now. So if Renz Priebus does sort of like get some control back in there, I think we're going to have to even be more vigilant
yes.
than we are now. Because
absolutely,
like,
because everything is going to start to sound normal even
right,
when
exactly.
it's not.
Exactly, because it's not going to sound like such buffoonery, but it's still going to be buffoonery.
Correct, yeah. Like the advantage we have with the Trump administration is they're openly telling us all their secret plans at every moment.
Right.
There's been no secrets with these guys.
No.
Everyone who was claiming that Steve Bannon had a secret conspiracy, I was like, he is an open conspiracy.
I was gonna say,
there's no secret conspiracy. He's telling us exactly what he's doing. It's as evil as you're thinking it is. He's
yeah.
just... openly told, and it's worse if he openly tells us he's doing it and we're like, he has a secret conspiracy and that's, we can't figure it out, so we can't do anything. Like, when someone's openly telling you their conspiracy, you can just do something about it at that point. You don't have to fall for that shit.
Right.
But everyone was like looking for the secret layer, and I was like, there is no secret
layer
no secret with this guy. What he's doing is bad, openly.
Right. Yeah.
There's no secrets.
Yeah.
In any case, so we'll see how this transition happens. The rollout of Black History Month was not so smooth. Oh my God. There is something... so unfortunate about the fact that Trump had to take office 10 days before Black History Month started.
Oh my
like,
God.
We should have let him take office in April so that he could work out some of these historical facts that he seems to be lacking. He
oh God.
Said...
He was at a panel
he
with,
was at
like,
a panel.
The 4 black people that he knows
right.
or have given money to the RNC,
exactly.
and there's only that many of them.
Said, I'm very proud that now we have a museum on the National Mall where people can learn about Reverend King and so many others. Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is getting recognized more and more, I noticed.
I noticed. Just
finally getting
to notice.
His moment of fame. Frederick
yes.
Douglass, finally out there.
Yes.
Been waiting for so many years to get his due, like 150 years. But more and more.
More see, and more.
Like this.
He's done an amazing job.
He's done an amazing
Frederick
job,
Douglass.
That Frederick Douglass.
Yeah.
Obviously, everyone had to wonder if he thought Frederick Douglass was still alive and also who he thinks Frederick Douglass is.
Right, exactly. Yes.
He
also, at that same event, turned talking about Martin Luther King into him talking about himself.
Right.
Because there was that
classic.
There was that story after they moved into the White House that the bust of Martin Luther King had been removed, which was soon reported to be inaccurate, and he got really angry about it. And on some level, I can understand why he was angry about that, because it was wrong.
Yeah.
But anyway, he went on a tirade about that. He said, "Last month we celebrated the life of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., whose incredible example is unique in American history." He should have stopped right there.
Yeah.
That's the statement right
there.
That's
even a questionable sentence, just because it's a bizarre statement to make. Like,
right, exactly.
He was an instrumental,
it's vague,
you know.
Right. I want him to name a fact about Martin Luther King Jr., and he can't do that.
Just
which
saying
is why
he's unique in American history doesn't even say that he approves of what
an amazing job
Martin Luther King did. Like,
He's noticed that he did an amazing job. Yeah. But he didn't stop there, unfortunately, because he went on and he said, "You read all about Martin Luther King when somebody said, I took this." Right. That's when you first
may have
heard of
him. Martin King.
You heard about Martin Luther King when they said that they took a statue out of my office last week. And it turned out that was fake news. The statue is cherished. It's one of the favorite things.
Not my favorite thing.
No,
it's the favorite thing.
And we've got some good ones. We have Lincoln, we have Jefferson, and we have Dr. Martin Luther King. So, I mean, he also talked about CNN in that, because there's, like, an African-American on CNN who he said he likes. No, a different guy who, like, I think goes on and is, like, a Republican who goes on. But he was like, "I never watch CNN because I can't watch it because CNN is fake news." Like, he had so many, like, insane digressions supposed to be talking about Black History Month that
you
were just,
like... You may
have
heard of Martin Luther King back when they reported a story about his bust being removed from my office.
He's probably going to change history books.
It's a man whose bust was in the president's office. That's what's unique about him in American history. Meanwhile, Mike Pence tried to honor Black History Month by honoring Abraham Lincoln for getting rid of slavery. Don't honor a white person on the Black History Month.
He did great things. You honor him on President's Day.
Exactly. He was a great president on President's Day.
Oh, God. Oh, these guys.
He's not... First of all, the creator of Black history, or even a participant in Black history, because he's a white person. He participates in white history.
That's right.
It's like, Women's History Month was an important month because...
Because all of the
Barack
men
Obama,
gave them the right to vote.
Exactly.
Because whoever signed
Theodore Roosevelt did.
Jesus.
You guys don't understand the most basic things about things. But
thankfully,
genius.
The internet has been...
doing
alive
it.
The last couple weeks in so many ways. Somebody started a Frederick Douglass Twitter account from beyond the grave.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't from beyond the grave, but
Frederick Douglass
is obviously dead even
so.
Though Trump may not realize that he is. And all of these tweets are...
They're all geniuses. They're all written in Trumpisms.
Yes.
We're just going to read you some of them because it feels important that we do that.
Yeah.
"Hope you like everything I did for women's suffrage. Even the losers, haters, and flat-chested fives. Enjoy." "My keynote speech at Emancipation Memorial was highest rated speech with biggest crowd ever. Dishonest CNN chose not to cover it. Terrible." This he tweets at Donald Trump. "Your fake national security immigrant ban goes against everything I stood for when I was alive 122 years ago. A
horrible
mess.
Oh, God.
"Appreciate Donald Trump. Congrats on amazing job I did to secretly educate myself and other slaves while still living under slavery in Maryland. My work is finally being recognized."
God.
They're just
they're all
so good.
There's a million of them.
Yeah,
look
them
up.
Go follow that account. I mean, don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
And in other facts that never were.
God. Yes, more
this
alternative
is my
facts.
Favorite news story of the week.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, this is a good one.
Was a good one.
Yeah.
It turned out. Last week, and hopefully her last appearance on television.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe, literally. Yeah. Kellyanne Conway was discussing the immigration ban.
Yes.
And made up a fake terrorist attack.
That's right.
To use as the basis for an
Why
argument
Obama.
About Obama's, who's about an immigration ban that is not an immigration ban. It's
it
a long
not,
story.
Right, exactly.
That Obama had enacted.
Right.
Which was... So there were layers of incorrect facts there. But my favorite thing was that she specifically named a fake terrorist.
Yeah, she called it
the
Bowling Green Massacre.
And so in any case, so she was saying that Obama had instituted an 180-day immigration ban because of the Bowling Green Massacre.
Right.
Now, first of all, there was no Obama 180-day immigration ban.
No.
They they kind of like vetted their security measures. And right. so they slowed down the right. visa vetting process for 180 days, but they did not ban anyone right. for that time.
Right.
But then the more important part is that there was no such thing as the Bowling Green Massacre. That's not a thing that occurred. Right.
Nobody died in Bowling Green at all, which is what massacre would imply. Right. exactly. At least one person would have needed to have died for there to have been a massacre.
There were two people with terrorist ties that right. were arrested.
Right.
In relation to the event she's trying right, to describe
attempting
here.
Attempting to, weren't they like giving money to like Al-Qaeda and yeah, Iraq it was like or something, something like that.
Like
was,
that.
Right. So there was a thing that happened in Bowling Green.
It was two people who got radicalized, had joined ISIS, but they didn't mastermind a Bowling Green right. attack because that never happened.
And even when she explained what it was after she realized she was wrong, she got the facts wrong because she said that they had like gone to Iraq and they hadn't. And,
right. Like
it was,
she like, didn't whole, know.
She'd still, even after she had the, even after she had the chance to get her shit in order, she didn't. Get there, which well, is not shocking. She's a fucking idiot.
I mean, but. So the hashtag never remember was trending. Right. Twitter was doing it for yeah. the Bowling Green Massacre.
So good.
And there were also some things beyond Twitter that, like, there was a Bowling Green Massacre vigil in New York.
yes.
That, and there was, like, somebody set up a Bowling Green Massacre Victims Fund page yep. that went to the, that directed to the ACLU.
yep.
Like, there was so much mischief on the internet as a result of the Bowling Green Massacre.
So good.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Now, she claims that she got a lot of flack for messing up one word.
Right, because she, what she meant was she was talking about the...
Bowling
she,
Green
she
terrorists.
Wanted to say the Bowling Green terrorists.
But the word massacre just got stuck
right,
in her
she
head.
She did mean to say massacre, and she did finally acknowledge that there was no Bowling Green massacre. Thankfully. I'm surprised she did that, to
I
be
know.
Perfectly honest. As the inventor of alternative facts,
right,
I'm
mean,
surprised she bothered
not,
to care.
Why not go with it? Yeah.
But, she,
unfortunately,
yeah, unfortunately for
the
her,
the internet did some digging on
yes.
this and found that
some simple digging,
some Googling
of her own interviews.
Right. It turns out she didn't misspeak at all because she has talked about the Bowling Green Massacre before.
She's been peddling the Bowling Green Massacre
for a while now.
Yeah. Well, at least recently she's been talking about it in regards to this Muslim ban.
Yeah.
Because these were from January 29th,
right.
which was,
yes.
I think, only a couple days before
she was
actually
talking to
was
Cosmo,
talking about the Today Show. Right.
As you do.
Interview to Cosmo. To Cosmo and TMZ.
Yeah,
like,
the two most reliable news sources that the White House definitely should be talking to.
Right.
She claimed that Obama halted refugees from Iraq in 2011 because, quote, he did that because two Iraqi nationals came to this country, joined ISIS, traveled back to the Middle East to get trained and refine their terrorism skills and come back here and were the masterminds behind the Bowling Green Massacre of taking innocent soldiers' lives away.
Oh, she's got even more details this time. There's soldiers dying in this version.
And then he did this because I assume there were two Iraqis who came here, got radicalized, joined ISIS, and then were masterminds behind the Bowling Green attack on our brave soldiers. She said it three times, you guys.
Yeah. She really either thought that was a thing that existed
right.
or thought that she was going to pull one over on us.
Like,
one of those two things had to have been the
both
case.
Both of them are terrible.
Right.
But,
yeah, either way, go fuck yourself,
right,
Kellyanne Conway.
Exactly. But I love the idea of... just creating a terrorist attack. This is what I'm saying about these people. This is like
yeah.
Steve Bannon. Like, this is like people saying Steve Bannon has like a secret agenda. He
yeah.
doesn't. His agenda is open and it's stupid.
Yeah.
This is the same thing. Her agenda is to make us scared by talking about a terrorist attack.
Yes.
Whether or not that happened,
right.
not important to her.
Yeah.
It's just to remind us of terrorism existing.
Right.
Apparently, she is not informed about how easily Google works. Because it only took
some
quick Googling to find out yeah. that this was a fabrication. But this is like a level of just like blatant nonsense that I did not ever expect would come out of the White House.
Yeah.
And it's sort of tickling me that they're even trying it.
I know.
I mean, this is like, this
yeah.
was such a funny story
yeah.
when it came out. Like every piece of information that came out about this story was funnier than the last. Every tweet that got sent about it was funnier than the last.
I know.
Like, every moment of it was genius. And because of it, CNN might just, like, never interview her again.
Right. Well, they have, yeah, good work, CNN.
Yeah.
She's on there a lot. And, I mean, has literally been laughed at by Anderson Cooper on there.
I mean,
because
she deserves
so
it.
So ridiculous. But there was an instance yesterday where she, after this whole thing, she basically got disinvited from doing the State of the Union yesterday, their
right.
Sunday morning show. She tweeted that she couldn't do it because she had a family thing.
Right.
And that also she had never said that they were trying to get her. Like, there was a whole back
right.
and forth about, like, how she was like, they wanted me on, but I couldn't do it. And then finally CNN was like,
no, we disinvited her.
The White House offered you up to us and we told them no, and we can prove it. And you should probably go buzz off and like never come here again.
They said they had serious questions about her credibility because she has, it was on their network that the Bowling Green Massacre and alternative facts came to be into the popular imagination. But this, I think, you know, her role, it has been leaked before that one thing Donald Trump will do when he's feeling down and nervous is bark at Kellyanne Conway to go get more interviews and go hit the media circuit. Yeah. And it would be great if the media was just like, actually, we don't need you, thanks.
Right.
Because she's not providing any useful information to anyone. If she's just going to go and lie, they could have any idiot on the street, including an actual ranting lunatic, to provide the same context.
Here's a theory about that I heard somewhere, and I don't remember where, that I thought was interesting and I think is probably fairly accurate. The CNN and all of the media outlets want news from the White House.
Of course.
Like, that is a thing that they cover. That is a thing ultimately they need. They need to be able to report it to us. They even need to be able to tell us if the people are lying to them. And a thing that is becoming problematic for the Trump White House is there are fewer and fewer and fewer surrogates who will go on Sunday shows and speak on their behalf. Usually you would send, you know, John McCain is the type of person that you would send to
Sunday
show.
You send someone in the Senate. You send a congressman who's a rising star.
Right.
You send your your Cory Booker
is. Credible people, and I'm not saying Kellyanne Conway is credible because she's certainly not, but the number of credible people who will speak on behalf of the Trump administration is shrinking
rapidly.
Rapidly.
And it's only going to get smaller. It can only possibly get smaller.
Right. Yeah, that's right. It can't get bigger.
Because he only shoves people out of his circle. Right, he never pulls them back in.
Yeah. So that, I think, is sort of like, it's leaving the press in an interesting conundrum because you want Kellyanne Conway to come on and tell you what's going on in the White House.
But not also, if she's just going to make up fucking nonsense lies and not provide any context to what's going on in the White House. Because talking about the Bowling Green Massacre doesn't help us understand why the Trump unless the Trump administration is literally governing on the basis of made up facts, which is something
sort
we only need
doing.
To know once.
Right. Yeah.
We don't need her to continue to come on CNN and tell us that if that's what they're doing. We can. It's implied.
Yeah.
It's understood.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, going to only become worse over time. And what we'll see, I think, is that the fewer places that are willing to accept interviews with Kellyanne Conway, the less likely she is to stick around in the White House much longer, because that's her only use there.
Yeah.
You know, they declined to give her a real role so that she could go and do these interviews.
Yeah.
And if she can't get these interviews...
Yeah, she's like counselor or something, which is like a fake thing.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not
specifically given this role so that she could go hit the you know, the cable news circuit.
Yeah.
And if she is not being invited to visit the cable news circuit...
Bye.
Then what do they need her for?
Girl, bye.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're going to zip through some foreign policy news because you know what?
We don't like foreign policy news,
but we felt like it was
important
to tell.
But we also don't want to go to war with Iran.
Right, exactly. We don't want to talk about foreign policy, but we also would be remiss to tell you that we're about to go to war with Iran.
Right. Apparently, our Michael Flynn and our current administration are taking a slightly harder approach, harder line approach with Iran.
Yeah. Well, Iran did some missile shenanigans last week or whatever.
This is classic Iran.
It's classic basically any of our somewhat enemies whenever a new administration gets
into
power.
Yeah, they test the waters.
They do this all the time. China has done it. I mean, they did it to Obama twice. This is not new. So it's not shocking that they did this. And they're basically goading the administration into saying something like this. Right, exactly. good work, Iran. You did it. They claim that they're putting Iran on notice. Whatever that means. Nobody exactly knows. But
they're blaming the nuclear deal that Obama struck for making Iran feel emboldened.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like this situation is just never going to be sensible. I feel like Obama basically got elected on the hope that he would bring sensibleness to foreign policy, and he did for the most part. I mean, you know, I don't agree with a lot of what he did in terms of continuing some military interventions abroad that I was not a fan of to begin with. Way too many drone strikes. But he did bring sort of an air of respectability back after this sort of horrible nonsense of the Bush administration, so that we were able to do things like make a nuclear deal.
We had
with
allies again under Obama.
Exactly.
Which
and
was
like,
nice.
We were able to negotiate in non militaristic terms with places like Iran, where traditionally we had not had much of a relationship with them. And that was something, that was a big sticking point in his, you know, in his primary against Hillary Clinton. She thought that we should not negotiate with Iran.
Right.
And he was like, well, let's try it. And Iran was like, yeah, all right, we'll try it.
Sure.
But so to go back to the hawk days with Iran, just adds, that's instability that compounds itself near and far, because Iran being sort of in this weird, unstable relationship with us only makes the rest of the Middle East more unstable. It only makes our relationship with other Middle Eastern nations more unstable. They have a very complicated role in the Middle East. We have a very complicated role in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And we're not even fucking there. But so this is really only going to make everything scarier. Is the sort of official
is the summary
of what's going on.
Yeah.
So they basically took the bait from Iran.
Yeah, they did. Some unrelated foreign policy news that we're again just going to zip through.
Yeah.
Because that's all we want to do.
That's all we have time for.
We had our first Trump military operation last week, and
failure.
It was an abject failure.
Sad.
On all accounts.
Wrong.
Yeah, sad. yeah, exactly. Disaster. We had a raid in Yemen. That was supposed to go after some, I think, Al-Qaeda terrorists there.
After American citizens instead by accident.
It got an American killed, one of our soldiers who went in. The people who we were attempting to attack were tipped off due to increased drone activity leading up to it. So they were basically just like not, we didn't really get much of anything out of the whole thing.
But we also did kill a bunch of civilians and children.
So we were successful at that.
Yeah.
Well, children killing.
We're good at that.
Nailed it.
The U.S. drone program is top-notch at killing innocent children.
Yeah.
We do it successfully all the time.
Yeah. Thankfully,
another massive success for our children-killing drone program.
Thankfully, we have a very skilled diplomat who was just sworn in last week
as our
new Secretary of State. But actually, no, because he has no experience in that.
Does he have any?
So... If we're expecting Rex Tillerson to save us on the world stage with his high-level diplomacy, then I feel like we should all continue to be terrified about that.
Also, we might be at war with Australia soon. Somehow Trump managed to piss off Australia.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, Australia's relationship with us is like, we'll follow you into this dumb war.
I was going to say,
and then they say, we need something, and we're like, we're busy. And they're like, no, that's cool.
You know, people talk about sort of like the, quote, special relationship we have with the UK. And that is accurate. But what a lot of people forget is that really when it comes down to at least facts and the nuts and bolts of it, Australia has really been our closest ally over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, we share a common history in many ways. We share common idiocies in many ways.
Sure.
Their idiocy is similar to our idiocy. It's the sort of outback British mentality, if you will.
Sure.
You know? But Australia will literally follow us into any dumb quagmire.
They'll
go to Iraq with us. They don't care.
No.
They'll go into any idiot military situation.
They've got our backs.
They have our
regardless
backs.
Regardless of and then, whether they should and, or not.
And not only that, we don't really have their backs and they don't care. They'll still follow us into any nonsense.
So
pissing them off is hard.
Stupid.
It's not easy to piss off Australia. John McCain had to call them back and be like, no, everything is under control. Don't worry about it. Like, you know things are bad when John McCain is having to call foreign leaders to apologize for Donald Trump pissing off our closest allies.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So that's sad.
Yeah.
And in another unrelated, idiotic turn of events... we voted on Tuesday to gut the Obama administration gun control regulations that helped stop mentally ill people from getting guns.
And while
you know how Republicans are always claiming that the problem isn't the guns, the problem
is the crazy people who have the guns.
Crazy people
and
with
we
guns.
We need to deal with mental health issues. This is a thing that, like, obviously Republicans want everybody to have guns, and I get that. But, like, this is a thing that totally undermines their own public statements about what we should be doing in terms of gun control.
Yeah.
Because, like, usually after one of these massacres, Republicans point to the telltale mental signs that we should have known a person was crazy, and that is why that person shouldn't have had a gun, and we need to deal with that. But what they just did here is ensure that schizophrenics and people with bipolar depression can have guns.
Yeah. So that I mean, sounds just like them.
It sounds,
but
exactly
it also,
like
I don't want to hear it from them when a crazy idiot
right, exactly.
shoots
they've,
up a school. I don't want to hear from them that mental health
regulations that talking point from their
the
repertoire.
Answer. Yeah. So now they're just going to have to be like, no, we are in favor of crazy people shooting
people
up your
school. People
shooting
other people. And if they say anything else, then we will be there to
we
correct
them. The proof is in the pudding.
Yep.
The vote pudding.
There it is.
the vote pudding. Yeah. Right. meanwhile, the sort of war between Trump and cities and states is ramping up in a lot of places. And California is sort of like
California.
The ultimate battleground for this. Because California has a lot of leverage.
Yes.
Because California is 13% of the nation's economy.
Yeah.
We're the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah.
And when they tell us that they're going to defund us, we have the leverage to be like, oh, no, we're going to defund you.
Defund you, exactly.
So a state Senate committee here approved a bill that would prohibit state and local law enforcement agencies from using our officers or jails to uphold federal immigration laws.
Right.
Because we are a sanctuary state
for
the most part.
That's what,
and we have the first sanctuary. LA was the first sanctuary city.
Right. And this would basically make us a full sanctuary state. We have most of our big cities are sanctuary cities.
But we haven't. This basically extends that mentality to everywhere.
To
so essentially, it bans local law enforcement from doing any immigration enforcement work.
Right.
Because that's not what we're up to. We want
to
be up to here.
In that same insane O'Reilly interview that he gave, said, I think it's ridiculous. He reiterated his opposition.
This is going
to
breed crime.
Breeding crime. And he said, if we have to, we'll defund. But then he also went on to say, wrongly, he said, we give tremendous amounts of money to California. California is many ways out of control, as you know.
This is like when he says that cities are like burning.
Right.
It's like he's not...
Right.
Been in reality
and
since.
And they do give us money for some things, but
we give them more money back.
More money back. Right, exactly.
That's not giving us money, by the way. We're giving them money.
Yeah, do they give us money, like, for specific programs? Because we have, because our
population
is larger, so we have more people on federal food stamp program. Yes, so they give us money for the federal food stamp.
Do our tax dollars more than cover that money?
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Do our tax dollars also cover food stamp programs and other
for
resources
other
for other
49?
States?
Yes.
Yeah.
They do.
They do. So fuck them.
Yeah, exactly.
But I am interested to see what happens with this because if, first of all, California is working great, as everyone with a brain has said time and again of late. The sort of the post-Schwarzenegger California has really come into its own. We're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
People are happy here. We have a functioning state government. We have a supermajority in the Democrats in both houses, so things actually get passed here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things are going swimmingly in California.
Right.
It couldn't be burning less.
Yeah.
And so these constant claims are...
But this is... We've had a few showdowns because I didn't have
this
it on
is
the
not
dock.
The first.
But remember, last week was when that crazy Breitbart dude was supposed to speak at Berkeley and
Milo
he got ran out of town
whatever,
and Trump said that he would defund
the
Berkeley,
Berkeley system
the state
and they were like nice try
state, yeah exactly
it's a state funded school
so,
you guys there's
but
not
anyway,
that much
I mean,
federal money going
he
to
is we've had a few recent spats with him and
I'm interested
I'm excited
we are
to
out
ha-
of control right
more.
Now I know we are out of control right now we've gone power mad because we are the state that has, I think, most resolutely and aggressively pursued anti-Trump policies. And it's because, I mean, 750,000 people in the streets on the Women's March Day in LA, a city where people often cancel on brunch for no reason.
Right.
Like, these sort of constant protests, this level of action, the number of people that were at LAX last week for the Muslim ban. I mean, these are not common LA things.
No.
These are maybe common in the Bay Area, but LA is in on the action now. This is so Californians are out of control in the sense that they are not taking this shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can see why he thinks that.
Meanwhile,
pray for guys before you go to when you're saying your prayers tonight, because I know that's what all of our listeners do before they go to bed
obviously.
Every night.
Is say
their prayers, send it up to the Lord. Include Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Celebrity Apprentice, guys.
They need it. As Trump told us.
Right. The fucking national prayer breakfast.
As you do. You like to pitch your TV show at the prayer breakfast. That's common, pitching your TV show at the prayer breakfast.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
what everyone does. We had tremendous success on The Apprentice. And when I ran for president, I had to leave the show.
Mm.
That's when I knew for sure I was doing it.
Mm.
And they hired a big movie star, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to take my place. And we know how that turned out. The ratings went right down the tubes. It's been a total disaster. And Mark will never, ever bet against Trump again.
Talking about Mark Burnett.
Yeah, Mark Burnett. Who
introduced him at the prayer breakfast.
Exactly.
Who's a known wacko Christian nutbag.
Yes. And he says, and I want to just pray for Arnold, if we can, for those ratings. Okay?
There it is.
Schwarzenegger responded, actually, in a
pretty good way.
Good way. He said, why don't we switch jobs? This was a Twitter video. Why don't we switch jobs? You take over TV because you're such an expert in ratings, and I take over your job, and then people can finally sleep comfortably again.
Yeah.
Which, as much as Arnold Schwarzenegger was a terrible governor who I don't wish on anyone, I would sleep better if he was the president than I currently do with 100%. Donald Trump.
Yes.
Like, a little better.
Right.
Because at least he's married to a Kennedy.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I've always felt like at least we had that.
And he was pretty good on gay rights, and he was also pretty good on environmental
things. He's terrible on everything else. Did not manage the budget well.
No.
Things were not functioning.
No, we had to really...
The government was basically shut down.
Right. The Democrats had to really come in and fix all of that after we got out of here.
And that's why Californians will now vote for any tax increase.
Well, exactly. And that's also why he's in large part due to why California now has supermajorities in both of our state houses. Because we're not trying to mess with that
Even
again.
That socially progressive Republicanism was not working
for
us.
No.
No, that's... I mean, I literally think he is the specific reason that when you now put a prop with tax increase... We know what it was like to have lower taxes, and it didn't work for us.
No, it didn't.
Nothing worked.
No.
This is maybe my other... This is our final story and maybe my other favorite story of the
week. It's one of mine, too.
Which is,
for sure.
According to the Times, the light switches in the cabinet offices are proving a little tricky for the Trump administration officials. Apparently,
they can't find the lights.
Have been holding meetings in the dark because they can't find light switches in
and
their meeting rooms.
And literally struggling out of the exits, like bumping it.
Like, can't find the doors.
Yeah.
We're holding meetings in the dark, you guys.
They don't know how to turn the fucking
this
lights
is an administration.
On. This is a metaphor
for
literally what's going
everything
on in America
going on.
Right now.
I mean, my God. And only in this White House would we find this out, by the way.
Well, that's true. I know.
Like, everything about this is sad. This is totally. Sad, period. Trump style.
Yeah, full stop.
This
as
is
you
full
like to say.
Stop sad.
Yeah.
In any case,
oh, boy.
That's the news this week.
It was a lot of it.
I feel like the podcast is always going
to
be this long.
I had to guess it was long.
It's really long, and it's only going to get longer. And I'm sorry about it, but there's just so much.
But how fun was that, guys?
I mean, every moment of this week
fun and terrifying.
Was fun and terrifying.
I hope we don't amuse ourselves right into the fucking toilet as a country.
I know.
Sometimes I worry about that.
I'm so sad that came an hour and 40 minutes into the podcast because I feel like that's the best line that we've had so far tonight.
Yikes.
In any case, if you
want
to save
to
America,
amuse ourselves into the toilet
rate us
again
on
next
iTunes.
Week.
Save America, rate us on iTunes, write a comment about how much you hate or love us, your choice. And we'll be back next week with special guests. We will have the crew from Bad News Live back
we'll
on
definitely
this podcast.
Be amusing ourselves into the toilet next week.
Because
those guys are funny.
Exactly. Yeah, they're having a show coming up and they will tell you all about it next week. It's coming up in a couple weeks, I think on the 18th.
Yeah.
So if you're in the LA area, get on the lookout for that. But they'll be back next week. That should be fun.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.